Today sees the start of a two-week isolation period for the pupils of a school in the eastern part of the country after it was confirmed a pupil there has been diagnosed with the coronavirus. The first case of coronavirus in the Republic was confirmed in a male patient on Saturday night. Meanwhile, Public Health England is warning that Britain must be prepared for widespread transmission of the virus. Globally, the death toll has now passed 3,000, with more than 88,000 people infected in over 60 countries. For more, I am joined in initially by ASTI President Deirdre MacDonald. Also, we'll be talking to Public Health Dr. Breda Smith, Consultant Oncologist Professor John Crown. Also on the line, Priscilla Lynch, who is Clinical Editor of the Medical Independent, and also we'll speak to Andrew Brady from Sky News about the situation in the UK. First of all, to you, if I can turn to you, Deirdre MacDonald of the ASTI, one school closed so far. What kind of concerns are you hearing from your members?
Well, Sean, the news has really only broken for schools, people going into schools this morning. So we haven't actually had much coming in, but I expect that over the period of the morning and the rest of the day, I'd say, to be honest, they're too busy getting on to the HSE and the health authorities, because they obviously are the experts in the field of epidemiology, and that would be the place to put the questions regarding spread of infection, etc.
And would you expect that your own members might be asked to and would be willing to cooperate in kind of remote education? We've heard of it happening in Wuhan and other
places.
Absolutely.
How might that
be done, Deirdre?
The thing is, actually, schools have been transformed over the last 10 years in terms of technology. So every school would have a website, every school will have text, and an awful lot of schools will have Moodle and other areas, other platforms, where work is already being put up and corrected in terms of, for example, a maths homework set, and then the solutions to those maths problems being put up on it. So there is nothing, of course, like a classroom where you have the teacher in direct contact and communication with the student. But for situations like this, and we've had before, you know, the snow and the weather and Storm Ophelia or whatever. So yes, there are huge potentials to keep the learning going. And also what I'd like to point out is that, for example, this week is reading week in Trinity, so it's a week off. So the same thing in schools, we can take it, if school has to close, that this can be taken as a time.
Yes, but in principle, though, given that even though the schools are closed, your members are available for work and to cooperate, say, with their principal teachers if they're asked to put programmes of work, say, up online for their students.
Now, this is allowing that they have the technology, that they have the broadband within their area. So a lot of teachers will have, there is no doubt about that. But as I said, you know, there is a lack of spending on the hardware element of this. But in terms of willingness and ability to do it, absolutely, our members are never found short of going the extra mile for their students.
Well, look, that's very reassuring. Deirdre MacDonald, ASTI President, thank you indeed for joining us. Just one thing, by the way, sorry, before I let you go. A text from a listener saying, I was amazed this morning when my daughter, who's attending secondary school, told me that the school had not said a word to the students regarding the coronavirus. We've been asked to trust the authorities, yet the biggest gathering each day is in our schools, and not a word about personal hygiene, hand sanitizers and so forth.
Well, as we talk, Sean, it's about 10 o'clock in the morning. So what I would imagine would be, and I heard earlier there you were talking about not getting hysterical and getting a perspective on this. So what I would say is that schools are getting their information, what they need to tell the students, and rather than give out misinformation and create hysteria, they are going to do that, you know, later.
I know, but, you know, you're the president of the ASTI now. Rather than imagining things, should you not just know them and know that your organisation is in touch with the department about this?
Oh, our department will be in touch. But we're talking about here in-school management. In-school management is responsible for the running of the school.
Right.
You know, which is a different train, shall we say, or a different organisational line.
Okay, fine. Well, look, we'll talk a little bit more about that to others in the course of the programme. Deirdre MacDonald, ASTI President, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Now, let's go to Dr. Breda Smith, HSE Public Health Doctor. Obviously, heightened concern, particularly since the weekend, with the cases initially on the island, but then one in the east of the country where, as we know, a school has been advised to remain closed for a fortnight. What advice are you giving to the families and the students in that particular school?
So thank you very much, Sean. Yes, public health professionals have been in contact with all students and staff within the affected school. They have been given clear guidelines in relation to what they should do over the next 14 days. There will be active follow-up over the next 14 days. They have been advised about the symptoms of COVID-19 and also are reminded to adhere to good respiratory etiquette, hand hygiene through this period of active monitoring. Contact will be made with them on a daily basis to ask about relevant symptoms over the next 14 days. Also they will be advised if they do become unwell to contact their local public health department.
Yeah. And are the students and teachers in that school, are they being advised to self-isolate? In other words, not to go out?
So they have been given clear isolation and restriction guidelines. So they have been asked to limit their movements and interactions as far as is practical. They have been asked to avoid attendances such as any social gatherings, crowded, closed settings, healthcare facilities, childcare facilities, school settings. So they have been given very clear guidelines in relation to how they should limit their movements and interactions over the next 14 days.
Yeah, and what would you say to that parent who I put the text that they sent to the secondary school, the leader there, we had Deirdre MacDonald, the ASTI president, about information that should be given about hand hygiene, sanitizers and so forth. I mean, is that kind of support available to schools that are still open? Obviously, they're all open except for this one so far.
Yes, Sean, there are very clear guidelines on the HPSC website for all educational settings. And also, it is also a clear guidelines for the public, really, and general, infection control procedures such as respiratory etiquette, coughing into one's sleeve, also hand hygiene thoroughly, using hand sanitizers or washing hands thoroughly. These are really the best tools we have to prevent the transmission of this infection. So it's really important that not only these close contacts, but the general public, that we all take on these infection control
procedures. And Dr. Smith, is there general advice to the public as well, simply not to shake hands with other people at this time?
It is important that, and we have done this in the past for previous infectious diseases, that likewise we try and break the chain of transmission. And this is by trying to prevent transmission of the virus through contact. So by adhering to strict hand hygiene practices, and there has been an announcement in relation to shaking of hands It is really to spread, to break that chain of transmission that can be from hand-to-hand spread.
We know that, for instance, in churches, people are advised, and certainly in the Catholic Church, that there shouldn't be handshaking at the sign of peace. Now, is that advice given to the public generally, not just churchgoers? Don't shake hands with others.
It would make sense that if you've that people would limit their, interaction. These are just casual contacts. They are just interventions that are to prevent the chain of transmission. We need to take a common sense approach to all of this, but at the same time try and practice as good infection control practice as is possible.
And just a question again that we've been asked, why have all students been asked to stay out of school in this particular school when we hear, for instance, that if you've been on a plane, it's only the first two rows sitting beside anyone or in front or behind anyone with the virus are deemed to be close personal contact?
So there are very clear guidance internationally in relation to the identification of close contacts. And it is this guidance that we are adhering to here in Ireland in relation to our public health recommendations. So all close contacts are identified through active follow-up. And in this situation, a close contact is any individual who is greater than 15 minutes face-to-face contact. So these guidelines we adhere to in relation to identifying close contacts. All close contacts have been identified and they've been given the relevant information in relation to the recommendations that they need to follow over the next.
Yeah, but again, I suppose a query would be why you wouldn't have advised, say, self-isolation for all of the students in the class, in the classroom of this particular pupil.
So all the close contacts have been given very clear guidelines. So all the contacts know exactly what they have to do, depending on their risk assessment. So it has been very clear those the guidelines that have been given to each person so, or individual in this situation is appropriate for their level of contact.
So would different advice be given to different pupils within the same school that we're talking about?
All the guidance has been given appropriate to the risk assessment.
Yeah. Okay. And just one last question on this. I mean, is it practical or feasible to put hand sanitizers in all schools?
Well, in many schools, students themselves bring their own hand sanitizer. Washing hands and cleaning hands is a very good infection control procedure. So it would be a recommendation that all schools would have hand washing facilities or hand sanitizers available to all pupils.
Okay, Dr. Breda Smith, HSE Public Health Doctor, thank you indeed for joining us. Professor John Crown is on the line. Thank you indeed for talking to us, John Crown. I know that you don't hold yourself out as being a coronavirus expert, but you do deal with very vulnerable patients and people who have compromised.
Yes, Sean, and thanks for having me on. And I think patients in the general public need to pay attention to what has just been said about the general precautions. We've had our first little bit of evidence about coronavirus or COVID-19 in cancer patients with a report from China and a very large and very detailed report of several thousand cases documented with the viral illness. Amongst them, they had 19 patients with a history of cancer. And the generalization is that for cancer patients, the risk of this turning into a serious disease is higher. So everybody needs to be careful not to catch this, but cancer patients need to be particularly careful. They really need to stay away from at-risk situations. They really need to be very careful about personal hygiene, hand washing, and insisting that those who are with them are also similarly careful about their hand washing. They need to stay in touch. They will all have an oncology unit or a radiation oncology unit that they're dealing with, and they need to have good lines of communication with their doctors in those units and to report any symptoms that they do have. In addition, I think it makes sense for all of us to have a look at the HSE website or the WHO website from time to time. These do have good updates for lay people outlining what the current state of risk is. In terms of travel, absolutely stay away from travel to endemic areas. There is not as yet a general recommendation against travel, but one wonders if cancer patients in particular should perhaps give some second thoughts about going on discretionary travel. If it's something which can be conveniently postponed or delayed.
I'm sure you get your own patients asking just exactly that question, John.
I do, and we have to be very honest with you, Sean. This is all very, very new to us. And the first case in Ireland, and we wish that patient very, very well. And in addition, the first published data on the specific problems of the cancer patient. The one take-home message I would give cancer patients is, it's very important for you to stay away from catching this virus. If you get this virus, the chance that you will have more serious complications is higher than it is for the general population. And people do need to be very careful about that.
So safety first and so forth. But are there any steps being taken within hospitals, such as the one I suppose you'd be most familiar with yourself in St. Vincent's, just as a result of the concerns about coronavirus?
Yes, well, we have an excellent, excellent team of microbiologists, infectious disease specialists, infection control staff, and the real soldiers in the trenches on this are our infection control nurses and scientists who, even when this crisis was not going on, do tend to keep us on our toes, alerting us to, you know, changes in various infections, various contaminations that are being found in different parts of the hospital. We have very, very aggressive policies in this regard, which I think, thankfully, we do. So I'm quite happy with that. But Sean, one thing I have to say that I'm a little worried about is, if we do get to a situation where large numbers of patients have this illness, and hopefully we do not, but if we do get to a stage where large numbers of patients have this illness and we have, as a result, a higher number of patients, you know, again, please remember, for most patients, the illness, I would never say trivial, Any illness with a 1% to 2% mortality cannot be considered a trivial illness. But for most patients who get this illness, they will get through it, they will be very sick, and they'll get over it. But we will have a small percentage of patients who do need very, very intensive management. They need intensive care. They need ventilators. We are very short of intensive care beds in this country. We're very short of all of the specialists who look after patients. My old friend and colleague, Dr. Tom Ryan from St. James's, has been beating this drum for years that we have desperately under-resourced our intensive care unit facilities in this country. And we do need to just be ready for the fact that we may well find that those systems are under great pressure with considerable knock-on effects in other areas. So the best thing we can do right now is follow the lead of our very professional public health doctors, public health nurses, public health staff, and do our level best to contain this infection, to delay it. There's a great phrase they use now in these illnesses called flattening the curve, making sure we don't get a whole great big number of new cases all at once that can overwhelm the system, trying to keep it contained, delayed as long as possible, give us time to build up resource to deal with it. But everybody, just be careful. Don't panic. Wash the hands. Follow the rules. Stay in touch with the HSE website. Cancer patients in particular, be aware, you need to be a little extra careful.
Okay, well, look, John Crown, Professor John Crown, oncologist, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Now to somebody else who's familiar with people who are in vulnerable situations, Tadhg Daly is Chief Executive of the Nursing Homes Association, Tadhg Nursing Homes Ireland, I should say.
You
have particular concerns about, well, equipment being made available to the professionals who are handling the patients in nursing homes.
Well, yes, I mean, we have been circulating information from the Health Surveillance Protection Centre over the last number of weeks, working closely with the HSE and the Department of Health. But, yeah, we're getting calls from members increasingly in the last number of days and weeks, having difficulty sourcing some of the materials, particularly face masks and indeed the hand sanitizers. But I think it's important to point out that I suppose the nursing home sector in some respects, while the resident population is highly vulnerable at risk, there's a very high standard of hygiene and infection control within the nursing home sector. So I think, you know, we're not complacent by any stretch of the imagination, but given our experience in dealing with the winter vomiting bug or flus in general, we're well placed. But we are taking, obviously, the advices from the public health and the HPSC in particular.
And you're concerned, I gather, Tadhg, about visitors to nursing home residents. Might visiting hours, our visitors have to be restricted?
I think that's where the issue for us is arising, and we need to speak today with the department, because we would, in the normal course of events, if someone had a flu generally, we would say to people that they shouldn't be coming visiting a nursing home in any event. But clearly, if anybody has had contact or come from an at-risk area or an area affected by COVID-19, then we'd be saying absolutely they should not be coming to visit a nursing home. So that will have to happen, I would imagine, in local areas. I'm not suggesting for a second that it would be widespread across the sector, but obviously this is an evolving situation, and we're monitoring it very, very, very closely, given the health risk to residents, but also the health risk to the staff.
Yeah, and reports, Tadhg, over the weekend that perhaps newly commissioned nursing homes that are not yet in use could be used as spaces for people to self-isolate in the event they cannot do so at home. Now, have you any information on that?
No, we haven't spoken to the department or the HSE, but clearly, you know, there are some new facilities, very small number, and some of our members would have additional capacity built in the last while that may not be available. So you've heard me speak before about the critical role of the nursing home sector in a well-functioning health service. So I think what we need to do is ensure that all the capacity is used all of the time. And clearly, if there is a requirement, then Nursing Homes Ireland and our individual members will obviously be engaged in discussions or conversations as appropriate with the health authorities.
Tadhg, thank you very much indeed for joining us. That's Tadhg Daly, Chief Executive of Nursing Homes Ireland. Across the water now to Enda Brady, correspondent with Sky News. Boris Johnson, we read and hear Enda presiding over a meeting of COBRA. That's effectively the emergency or the war cabinet. What measures are being looked at there?
Good morning, Sean. Yes, so COBRA is in session. The Prime Minister is there. Nicola Sturgeon has flown down from Scotland as well, First Minister, because they do have a case now in Scotland. Over the weekend, 12 cases in England confirmed yesterday, and that one in Scotland. So UK-wide, there are now 35 confirmed cases of coronavirus, all in hospital and all being treated. So what the government will be doing right now, it has a four-point plan of action. So they're looking to contain the outbreak, delay the peak coming, because we're obviously in the winter flu season and the National Health Service and hospitals are very, very stretched at this time of year anyway. So they want to contain it, delay it, work on research to better understand the virus, and then mitigate it, really, attempt to minimise the overall social and economic impact. So what we're going to see to that end later in the week is a big public information campaign run by government, just telling people, you know, the basics of hygiene, really, and just how to stop this virus spreading any further in the UK.
Yeah, and what about the kind of measures then? There's talk of some emergency legislation to give more flexibility, for instance, about increasing class sizes and so forth.
Yes, so the government is looking at everything. So if a number of teachers, for example, you know, we're seeing schools closing because the February half-term break there the other week, a lot of children and families would have gone to the north of Italy on skiing trips and educational trips and what have you. So the government is looking at a situation, say, for example, a school closed or a number of teachers were seriously ill and in hospital with the virus. What they would then be looking at doing is collapsing classrooms, basically. So, you know, year groups would be moving in and say a group of 30 would suddenly become a group of 60 and that education could continue. All sorts of plans being discussed at this stage. They're also looking at, you know, large public gatherings. Do we want to get to the stage where the French were at the weekend? They decided to cancel the half marathon in Paris, for example, over concerns about large numbers of people mixing. But, you know, very strange situation what the French did. They cancelled the half marathon. And yes, big soccer matches, Paris Saint-Germain played at the weekend, 40,000 people in a stadium. You know, it's interesting how they're handling it. But the UK hasn't got to that stage yet where the government is looking at cancelling mass gatherings. And of course, Cheltenham Festival coming up here in a matter of days. There's a lot to play for here.
Yes, in fact, it's due to start, I think, this day week. And needless to say, a lot of people listening to this programme would be interested to know, is it going to go ahead? Is it safe to go there? When will a decision be taken on that one, Enda?
Look, I can tell you now, I think Cheltenham Festival will go ahead. Speaking to people in the racing world over the past few days, you know, it's too close to the festival right now. I don't think we're at the level of numbers that the government would be. There's no panic. I mean, I spoke to the health secretary last week. I've been in Westminster all last week, and you see very senior members of government going around their business. There is no panic or confusion. You know, it's all very, very calm. And what you will see this week now, once this COBRA meeting is out of the way this morning, you will see a very determined effort by government to inform the public, keep people calm, and just let them know that this is being handled. And, you know, if you look at the figures, the facts are that the UK is handling this outbreak. You know, Italy did not get a grip on it in the early stage, and they end up with 1,500 plus cases. You know, the UK confirmed 12 yesterday, 3 on Saturday. We're still dealing with very small numbers here, but nobody is taking anything for granted. You know, there's no complacency setting in at all. And I think what we will see now is various different ministers hitting the airwaves as soon as they get out of this COBRA meeting to just relay that to the public.
OK, Enda, thank you very much indeed. That's Enda Brady of Sky News on the line from London. And to Priscilla Lynch now, Medical Independence Clinical Editor, thank you for staying on the line. Priscilla, you've been there, I know, since the start. But look, Enda mentioned there 1,500 cases in Italy, but that number seems, it just seems to have mushroomed. I mean, from a standing start of just literally over 10 days ago when they got the first case.
That's right, it's actually over 1,700 cases now and just about 40 deaths. So there was a large spike of cases during the weekend there, and it's in the northern Italy region. I think, as mentioned, they didn't particularly get a grip on it early and fast enough. So speed is really of the essence here. So they're dealing with the largest outbreak in Europe at the moment. So again, this is where the two cases in Ireland, the one in the north and the one in the Republic, have both been affected by the northern Italy region, as you pointed out there. So.
And again, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, just again, the UK, though, beside us again, still has a very small number of cases, even though that's increased at 36 cases, and around the rest of Europe as well. It's only about 100 cases in France and smaller numbers in other countries too.
What's your sense, Priscilla, about what further measures might be considered by the authorities here? You know, we're just 2 weeks out, for instance, from the St. Patrick's Festival.
Well, I suppose the HSE has pointed out that we have one case confirmed in Ireland so far and that they've initiated contact tracing and precautionary measures for those who would have had contact with this particular case. That includes the closing of the school where the student is involved, and parents and teachers and whatnot have been informed. But they're happy with the measures taken so far, but the National Public Health Emergency Team does meet very regularly, and they would be looking at other festivities in Ireland, such as the upcoming St. Patrick's Day Festival. And there is no danger to that being cancelled as it stands, but that situation could change in the coming days. And other sporting events, as we know, the Six Nations has also been affected. One of the other countries that has the largest number of cases would be South Korea, and they have spread there through religious gatherings in particular, and there's been some issues there that they didn't get a grip on it early enough either, and that these gatherings weren't dispersed or told to be more careful at the risk of infection. So there's a lot of issues there in South Korea over that. There's over 4,000 cases now actually there. So again, large social mass gatherings, I suppose, they will be looking at the moment. As I said, it's just confined to one case in the east of the country, but this is something that they're looking at day to day. And again, as the specialists who've been talking to you before me have said, it's all about good hand hygiene at the moment and infection control measures. And again, the majority of cases, over 80% of them, are mild of the disease. And even though there's been over 87,000 cases diagnosed globally, a lot of these people have actually already recovered or they're recovering. So I suppose that's comforting as well. But again, with Ireland, it's just about we're in the containment phase still. So just trying to contain the disease and manage those numbers and keep them small.
Okay, Priscilla, thank you very much indeed for those insights. That's Priscilla Lynch there, clinical editor with the Medical Independent. We'll take a break.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.